Now more of the Wild About Pets radio show on TalkZone.com. Once again, here's Susan Frank.
Welcome back to the show and our discussion with my guest, Frans de Waal, primatologist and author of Bonobo, the Forgotten Ape. If you'd like to see photographs of bonobos, you can click the purple Look While You Listen button, and that will take you right to my website and my photographs. Also, our phone lines are open. We are live. Today is Friday, April 10th, and if you'd like to join the conversation or ask Dr. de Waal a question, you can call at 888-463-6748. I'll repeat that, 888-463-6748. And we have been talking about that bonobos' social life, the sexual behavior is a very integral part of it. And again, quoting from your book, Dr. de Waal, you say that our fascination with bonobos is precisely because consciously or unconsciously we recognize the way sex functions in their social relationships. And of course, there is similarities. There is something, though, that I found as I was reading, you know, the book and seeing all the photographs, which again are fabulous. And you really, you get a feel that, you know, you're close up in the lives of the animals. I must say the idea of the adult and juvenile, some of the sexuality there troubled me. And I almost found Dr. de Waal that, you know, it's because, of course, how loaded that idea, you know, of the adult and the young has for us in our human society. And I found myself almost wanting a different word or a different construct to understand that instead of thinking, well, they're having sex with the juveniles.
It's never forced, though. It's a completely spontaneous interaction. In addition, these contacts are very brief. It's not like they have sex the whole day. It's like a typical bonobo sexual contact is like between 5 and 10 seconds. And so I usually call it like genital handshakes, basically. It's a very brief sexual contact. And it is always completely spontaneous. I've never seen a contact where one individual forced another into it. So that's maybe... that would set you at ease maybe a little bit about...
Sure. Well, that is wonderful to hear, actually, because that was going to be one of my questions. You know, has any observation happened of forced sex or rape? And you're saying that does not exist.
No. So in human society, in all human societies, and that's a big difference with the bonobo, is that we have a family structure. And we protect the family structure. And so we have a male-female offspring-type structure, usually in the societies that we know. And the bonobo is promiscuous. The bonobo doesn't have that. And there's a pro and a con there in the sense that some people are jealous of bonobos and say, why can't we live like bonobos and have sex as much as bonobos and be happy and peaceful and so on. But the price that the bonobo female pays for this kind of life is that males are not committed to anything. Males are never involved in infant care. Males don't support a family. Males are just going their own way. And so as a result, the females are taking care of everything. They're carrying usually a infant on their belly and a juvenile on their back. And it's an arboreal primate, so that happens in the trees, and that's a very heavy load for her to have. And as a result, females can have a baby only like once every 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's very different from humans who, because of their family structure, are capable of having children every 2 years if they want to. And so humans have populated the world with 6 billion people now, partly because we have a very different societal structure in which all that frequent sex that the bonobos have actually doesn't fit so well. So we may dream of it and want it, and some people may be jealous of the bonobo. Evolution has chosen a different path for us, which is more geared towards family, meaning male commitment. But male commitment also automatically means male control, because males will not commit in evolutionary sense to children if they have not some sort of certainty that these are the children that they made. And so in evolutionary terms, these things are connected. It's male care for offspring means male control over reproduction. And so there's pros and cons to everything, but that's the path that we have chosen, and the bonobo way of life doesn't exactly fit that.
We do have a caller online. We have Ellen from Buffalo Grove. Go ahead, Ellen. What is your question for Dr. de Waal?
Well, I noticed you have a photograph of a bonobo laughing, and I thought laughter was a human-only trait. So I wondered how typical is that photograph of a bonobo laughing?
Well, bonobos, like chimpanzees, they have many facial expressions, and many of these expressions are associated with emotions. And so they can cry, they can scream, they can ask for food or ask to be nursed. And yes, they have a laughing expression. And if you tickle a young chimpanzee or a young bonobo, they actually give sounds which are a bit like type sounds, which sound like laughing. And recent studies have shown that the same muscles in the face are involved as in human laughing, the same breathing rhythm as in human laughing. And so probably human laughing derives from that very early play expression that we see in the apes already. And so, yes, apes do laugh.
That's interesting. Do you ever see a bunch of verbalizations and then more than one ape laugh? Are they telling jokes?
No. but it's actually amusing how these things are connected, because take many human jokes. Human jokes have a sort of incongruity. It's like we go on a certain path in the joke, and then there comes the punchline. And the punchline is usually some unexpected thing that happens in the joke. And that's when we laugh. And that aspect of joking is present in the apes, in the sense that when there's incongruity, for example, the biggest, most dominant male is being chased by a two-year-old infant, which is totally incongruous, well, that adult male will have a play face, will have the laugh expression on his face, because he thinks this is because he thinks it's awfully funny. And actually, physical comedy is what they, if you show videos to chimpanzees, what are the videos they like? They like sex and violence, more than, let's say, landscapes or puppet shows or whatever.
Oh, no, that's like us.
So they like sex and violence, but also what they really like is slapstick. and I think slapstick has all the elements of their level of humor. That, you know, you climb on something and you fall off it. Well, that's something they can understand,
uh-huh.
and they think that's funny.
Well, sure, because they identify and they relate to that probably in their own lives.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your question, Ellen.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Where do bonobos naturally live, Dr. DeWall?
They live in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, which used to be called Zaire, which is a very troublesome place at the moment with a lot of warfare, even though 5 years ago we saw that it subsided, and then now we think again that it subsides. But, you know, they estimate that like maybe 6 million people have lost their lives in the warfare that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the country where they live. And that's a huge country. It's actually one-third of the United States, so that's how big it is. It is an enormous place full of forest, and we don't know how many bonobos there are, but the pessimistic estimates are 10,000, which is really nothing.
Oh, that's not a very low number.
Very low, and the optimistic estimates are maybe 50,000, but we really don't know because it's very hard to survey the area. But that, for the moment, I would go with the pessimistic estimate.
Oh, and do we find bonobos in zoos?
Yeah, there's actually not many. There's I think, only like 200 bonobos in zoos worldwide. And in zoos in the U.S., the typical zoos that you want to go to are San Diego, Milwaukee, Columbus, Jacksonville. Well, those are the main colonies, I think, in the zoos.
So what we know about them, and obviously you've written extensively about them, is that from the zoos, or do we get some information from any studies that have come from the wild?
Yeah, there are now, again, studies in the wild. So for 10 years, we had no studies because of the warfare. And before that, we had very interesting studies by Japanese scientists, mainly by Kano and so on. And at the moment, there are scientists from Germany, Belgium, and some Americans also are returning to the field to study bonobos again.
Let's talk about their intelligence, because that is another remarkable area of them. And first, I want to talk about some of the markers that, you know, we as humans think as behaviors or ways that we interpret creatures as being intelligent. And one of them, obviously, is recognition in mirrors. Do great apes or bonobos recognize themselves in mirrors?
Yes, and they're actually one of the very few animals who can do that. And so the way this is tested is called the rouge test, because in young children, human children, we put some paint or lipstick or something on their forehead that they cannot see without a mirror, and then we show them a mirror. And if the child then touches the spot on its head while looking in the mirror, meaning that it has found the spot on its head by looking at its image in the mirror, we say they have mirror self-recognition, which indicates a certain level of self-awareness. And these things have been tested on apes. Apes pass these tests. Monkeys don't. So monkeys, which are, let's say, macaques or baboons, or there are many monkey species, none of them has ever passed a mirror test, whereas apes, well, not all of them, but many of them pass these tests. And we have also done tests on elephants. They passed it.
Mm.
Dolphins probably passed it. But that's about the extent of it. So there are very few animals. Your average dog, you may think that your dog looks at the mirror at itself, but I'm not sure that the dog sees it as itself. It probably sees another dog there that it has gotten used to or something like that.
And how about tool use? Because obviously we believe, and there's a lot of news in the world when we saw that chimpanzees are tool users. Are bonobos tool users?
Well, the bonobo case is interesting because in captivity they're very good with tools. But in the field, I don't think there's any observation of tool use. And the reason that the field workers give for this is that there is plenty of food for them, which is attainable without tools. And so there's no need for them to develop tool use. Whereas chimpanzees, they're remarkable. Chimpanzees have lots of tool use in the field and as well as in captivity. And so that's a difference, is that the bonobo is not a great tool user, it seems, in the field at least.
Yes, and so you also mentioned, and you write in your book, that where chimpanzees, exhibit their intelligence through their tool use, the bonobo exhibits an intelligence in their sensitivity to other bonobos. What is that?
Well, I think bonobos are more empathic than chimpanzees. It's not that this is absent in chimps, not at all. But chimpanzees are more volatile in the sense that they can get angry, and so they're more emotional. And that interferes sometimes with their level of empathy for others. Whereas bonobos are very sensitive to others, not only in the sexual context, where it's pretty obvious, but they're also very sensitive to others in a more emotional context. So to give an example, at the San Diego Zoo one time, they were cleaning the water moat and they had emptied the moat around the enclosure. And so some juveniles had descended into the moat. And right before the caretakers were ready to fill it up with water, which would have been very dangerous, they had not noticed these juveniles who had descended into the dry moat. An adult male came over to them and started waving his arms and screaming and yelling at them to draw their attention. And that's how they discovered that the four juveniles were in the moat. And they got them out. And the adult male actually was the one who got the last one out and pulled it out of the dry moat before they filled it up. Now, that's very interesting behavior because that is perspective taking, as we call it in the cognitive sciences, meaning that this adult male, he was himself not in trouble at all. He was himself on dry land and there was no danger to him, but there was a danger to these four others who were in the dry moat. And so he alerted a third party to fix the problem. And this is all very interesting because it shows a little bit the social intelligence that these animals have.
Oh, I would have loved to have been there and seen that. We're going to talk more about some examples of bonobos exhibiting their intelligence. And we'll hear about Kanzi, a very famous bonobo. And he's famous for his comprehension of spoken human speech. We'll be talking about Kanzi as soon as we come back after this break.